What I taught Born and what he taught me. Born made me happy, but happiness never made anyone less stupid. During my recovery, I had such trouble remembering what waited for me outside, as if I had to learn it all over again, despite having been taught so many lessons. All kinds of dangerous ideas entered my head while groggy. It was as if the little foxes and other animals out in the desert ran in circles around my mind, barking and kicking up dust, stopping only to stare at me from afar and encourage me to wander. I kept fantasizing that I lived in a real apartment in one of the stable sanctuaries from my past. Everything would be fine. I just had the flu or a cold and was out sick until I got better. And when I was better, what would I do? When I was better, I would go back to university and to some part-time job. I would complete my studies so I could become a writer. Because the ruined city was just a bad dream, and my life as a scavenger was a bad dream, and soon I would wake up, and the visions of almost drowning, of losing my parents, and with them all connection with the past, would prove to be an illusion too. The longer Wick expended time and energy protecting me, the more ideas like this took hold of me. They had only a vague relationship to my memories of flight, of trying to find refuge, of all the dangers before the city. But minds find ways to protect themselves, build fortifications, and some of those walls become traps. Even as I started to walk around my rooms with Bourne, even as I ventured out into the corridors, it was so sad a fantasy that I brushed by without recognition the revenants that told me it was a lie. The chair stuck in the wall. The filing cabinet rusted beyond use, now just a barricade at the mouth of a tunnel. The lack of libraries or other people. Yet those sequestered weeks also contained some of my best memories because of Born. Wick was gone a lot, spying on the magician's movements, providing beetles to his small band of dealers, and possibly because of our argument, which left Born and me ever more time to explore. He'd gotten tired of being cooped up in the apartment. On days when I knew Wick would be out for hours, I'd take Born into the hallways, prickly with the fear of discovery and stiff from my slow healing wounds. It was all a construct by then, this game of not telling Wick that Born could talk. He had to know. But because I never admitted it and Wick never brought it up, Born became an open secret that existed between us like a monster all its own. It made me reckless, as if I wanted Wick to confront me. That somehow our relationship would be a total lie if Wick didn't confront me. Ignoring the strain on my own body, Born and I would race down dim-lit, dust-covered corridors. Born, afraid of colliding / congealing with the wall and tripping over his own pseudopods, wailing as he laughed, "You're going too fast!" Or, "Why is this fun?" Which just made me laugh too. When you don't have to run and you have the chance to run for the hell of it, it becomes a strange luxury. Then we'd collapse at the end of the hall and Born, in addition to his usual observation that he was hungry and needed a snack, I now let him hunt lizards and rats to blunt his appetite, would ask some of his questions. He never stopped asking them, as if he were really ravenous for the answers. "This dust is so dry. Why is dust so dry? Doesn't it need some wet for balance?" "Then it's mud."
"What's mud?"
"Wet dirt."
"I haven't seen mud yet."
"No, you haven't. Not yet." I would show Born a photo of a weasel in an old encyclopedia and he'd point with an extended tentacle and say, "Oh, long mouse," which brought me quickly to the idea of teaching Bourne to read. Except he picked that up on his own. When we played hide and seek, I'd sometimes find him hunched up on the edge of a midden of discarded books, two tentacles extending out from his sides to hold a book, and a single tentacle tipped with light curling down from the top of his head. He would study any number of topics and had no real preferences. His many eyes enthusiastically moving back and forth as he read the pages at a steady clip. I don't believe he needed light or eyes to read, but I know he liked to mimic what he saw me doing. Perhaps he even thought it was polite to seem to need light, to seem to need eyes. But the truth is, I don't really know what he thought or how he thought it. Because most of the time, I just had his questions. Eventually, I took him to Wick's swimming pool, which was Wick's laboratory. I loved the swimming pool, and perhaps that meant I loved Wick too, in a way. The swimming pool had originally had a skylight above it, extending to the top of the balcony cliffs, and a divot of open space remained all the way to the top, with Wick contriving to camouflage it from above with his illusions. When the light from the hole in the ceiling was right, it formed green and gold waves, as if the moss and lichen on the surface had mingled with the sun's rays and been transformed in some fundamental way. The light would glisten against the living filaments Wick had placed there as part of his work, and you could see dust motes floating and the occasional water bug or glider, and, rising off the water, a mist that curled back on itself like certain kinds of ferns. It could take a while to get used to the melange of chemicals, which gave off a dank smell, cut through with something spicy. That spice could be sweet or sour, but was always sharp. Wick needed the light in the mornings to feed the rich, revolting, shimmering stew brew to finish his beetles and other creations. But our shit and piss fed it too. Although the harsh smell was more of algae and peat and some bitter chemical, I'd long ago gotten used to it, even found it pleasant. Eel-like things wriggled in the mire, and the fins of weird fish broke the surface, only to submerge again.
"What's a swimming pool?"
Bourne asked. "A place people go into to swim."
"But it's full of disgusting things. Disgusting things live in there. Just disgusting. Really disgusting."
Disgusting was a word Bourne had just picked up and used often. "Well, just leave those disgusting things alone, Bourne, even if you are hungry." I gently slapped away a tentacle he'd begun to inch toward the water. I had no idea what effect those chemicals would have on him, nor did I want Bourne eating Wick's supplies, which would only endear him further. Bourne summarized for me,
"A swimming pool is a place where people like to swim in disgusting things."
"Close enough," I said, chuckling. "You won't be encountering many of those when you're out in the real world." And then I wished I hadn't said it, because I'd acknowledged that this wasn't the real world, that we lived in a bubble of space and time that just wouldn't last. I took him to the balcony out on the cliffs, too, but that was a little harder because I felt Bourne needed a disguise to be safe. I found a flower hat with just one bullet hole and a brown bloodstain to match. I found a pair of large designer sunglasses. I had the choice of putting him in a blue sheet or a black evening dress that I'd salvaged from a half-buried apartment. The evening dress was moth-eaten and had faded to more of a deep gray, But I chose it because I had nowhere to wear it and it was several sizes too big for me now. So Bourne reconfigured himself to be a little longer and less wide than usual, sucked in his stomach, more or less, and put on this ridiculous outfit. Only, on Bourne, it looked good. And it wasn't until later that I realized he'd drawn himself up into an approximation of my own body, that I was looking at a crude faux version of myself with green skin. But it wasn't complete enough for him.
"What about shoes?"
he asked me, and I regretted having gone off on a rant about the value of a good pair of shoes a couple of days before. "You don't need shoes. No one will see your feet. Probably no one would see him, period."
"Everyone wears shoes," he said, quoting me. "Simply everyone. You even wear them to bed."
It was true. I'd never gotten over having to sleep in the open so often. When you slept in the open in dangerous places, you never took off your shoes in case you only had a few seconds to gather your things and take off running. Bourne really wanted shoes. He wanted the full ensemble. So I gave him shoes. I gave him my one extra pair, which were really boots, the ones I'd come to the city in. He made a great show of growing foot legs and with his hand arms reached down to put on his new shoes. He'd muted his skin to a shade that mimicked my own. From the aperture at the top of his head, muffled by the hat, came the words,
"We can go now."
But if Bourne wanted the full ensemble, I wanted the full human. "Not until you grow a mouth," I said, "and a real face."
"Uh-oh,"
he said, because he'd forgotten. In those days, he always said uh-oh when he felt he'd made a mistake. Maybe he was also trying to be a little difficult, a concept he'd been field testing, usually in charming ways. The transformation only took a second. All of his eyes went away. Then two popped up where appropriate. Never, ever gray anymore. And a nose protrusion that looked more like the head of the lizard he had eaten a few hours earlier. And a kind of crazy grinning mouth. In that hat. In the black evening dress. In the boots. He looked so earnest that I wanted to hug him. I never for a second understood the gift I'd given Bourne. Never realized what other uses disguises could be put to. We went out on the balcony. Bourne pretended he couldn't see through his sunglasses and took them off. His new mouth formed a genuinely surprised "Oh."
"It's beautiful," he exclaimed. "It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful."
Another new word. The killing thing, the thing I couldn't ever get over, is that it was beautiful. It was so incredibly beautiful. And I'd never seen that before. In the strange, dark sea blue of late afternoon, the river below splashing in lavender, gold, and orange up against the numerous rock islands and their outcroppings of trees, the river looked amazing. The balcony cliffs in that light took on a luminous deep color that was almost black, but not, almost blue, but not. The jutting shadows, solid and cool. Bourne didn't know it was all deadly, poisonous, truly disgusting. Maybe it wasn't to him. Maybe he could have swum in that river and come out unscathed. Maybe, too, I realized right then in that moment that I'd begun to love him. Because he didn't see the world like I saw the world. He didn't see the traps. Because he made me rethink even simple words like disgusting or beautiful. That was the moment I knew I'd decided to trade my safety for something else. That was the moment. And no matter what happened next, I had crossed over into another place. And the question wasn't who I should trust, but who should trust me.